Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is our text number. Yesterday, during the programme, we spoke to Emma, and Emma contacted us about her son, Connor, who's 13, about to make his confirmation. But Connor was one of quite a few people in Ireland over the generations who was born with what's known as, Emma described, as a club foot. And that the foot keeps pointing inwards and growing inwards rather than straight. And I think Connor at this stage has had 8 or 9 operations to try and keep his foot straight. But the other thing I didn't realise, because we've all seen people with short feet with the raised heels and people with a club foot in our childhoods. But what I didn't realise that one foot, if you have a club foot, one foot is smaller than the other. One, and in Connor's case, Emma had to buy, always up to now, had to buy 2 pair of shoes, 1 size 7, and she uses the right one, and 1 size 4.5, and she uses the left one. Then you have to throw out the other 2 shoes. And now he's into trainers, obviously, and trainers, as you know, are expensive. And she now has to buy 2 pair of trainers, 1 size 7, 1 size 4.5, and discard the other 2. And she was wondering, in the new world we live in, with so many variations and offers and permutations you can buy on everything from a car to clothes or whatever, is there anyone that does permutations like that in different size footwear? And that's prompted Paul to contact us. Paul, good afternoon. Your son was also born with what's known as a club foot.
Hi, Joe. Yes, he was born with a turned-in foot. I was the reason I contacted you yesterday was on the basis I was listening to Emma talking about her son, mm-hmm. Connor, at the age of 13. And I was thinking to myself, our son is 15. And he went down a different route than Emma and Connor went down, in the sense that we weren't living in Dublin at the time. Okay. And where we were living, our son was born. He's 15 now, Joe. He would have been born in 2006. And he was born with the turned-in foot. Okay. And the people we met down there were asking us, advising us to go down the same route that Emma had been advised with Connor. Okay. But the treatment that seemed a bit harsh in our estimation.
It's the various surgeries. Yeah. But is it evident at childbirth?
Well, it's evident. I'll talk to my partner, Mary's here as well. Joe, she'll be able to help you out
with this detail. Okay. Mary.
Hi, yes.
Was it evident at a childbirth that your son...
Basically, we were told the day after he was born, the paediatrician came to us to tell us that he had this turned-in foot. It's called talipes, basically.
Okay, talipes, okay.
And
did she give her... Is there any understanding as to why?
There's positional. It can be caused by the position of the baby in the womb and the way the foot grows, or it can be a genetic thing, or they don't really know, I think, why it is caused. It's much more prevalent in boys than girls, though. Ah. But it can happen in girls. It can happen with both feet or just one foot. And it can have different severities. So our son, they basically told us, as I said, when he was a day old, that it was a mild case.
Okay.
It was most likely positional because of the way he had been in the womb. And that what they would do, they'd send the physios into us, they would strap his foot and leg, and that would go on for a little while and it should sort itself out, sort of way, with the physio and the strapping.
Okay.
And the strapping was basically like heavy-duty sticky tape. So it was very uncomfortable, very distressing for him to have it put on and changed and everything. So we went down that route for a couple of months, actually.
Okay.
We saw the orthopedic surgeon a couple of times, and he was saying, you know, most likely he won't need anything after the physio. Most likely he'll be able to, you know, run around, play football, do everything a normal boy will do. But after about 3 months, I saw the surgeon again, and he basically said, oh, he'll definitely need surgery. And basically the surgery would be to open his foot up from the toe right around to the other side of his heel.
Yeah.
And he said, it's all soft tissue, so I don't know until I do the operation whether it'll be one operation or maybe another operation later or numerous operations. So I was a bit, as you can understand, I was upset at the idea of his foot being cut open and maybe not just once but multiple times. So I did a bit of research and I found out about this Ponseti treatment. And initially I thought it was only available in the UK, but I found with a lot of research that it was available in Crumlin, in the hospital in Our Ladies. And I got a referral to see the Ponseti clinic and they took Charlie, they took him in and they started treatment.
There's only been an operation for a year prior to that, Ponseti method disease, so...
And how does the Ponseti method, which, as you say, is carried out in Our Ladies' Children's, how does that differ to the original option, which seems to be the option that Emma and Connor had to go through, and that was so 7, 8, 9 operations?
Yeah, the difference is really, it's probably more long-term and very much involves the parents every day kind of doing stuff. So initially, he was brought in and they basically manoeuvred his foot into the correct position and put a plaster cast on.
Okay.
And that was there for a week or two. Then we brought him back and they removed the cast and they did what they call a tenotomy, which is kind of a very, very minor operation, a little procedure really, where they snip the tendon.
Okay.
And the foot kind of falls back into place.
Okay.
And they put another cast on for another couple of weeks. And then when the cast is removed, you're basically given little boots. They're kind of like leather sandals and they're splinted together with a metal bar.
It's called the Dennis Brown bar.
Yeah.
And the shoes adjust at an angle.
You get a little spanner and you get Allen keys to adjust it. And the child is in that boots and bars for 23 hours a day for about 3 months.
Wow.
And then after that 3 months, they're in the boots and bars for naps and sleep for about 40, until they're about 4.
And
but once they kind of start walking, pulling themselves up, they're allowed out of the boots and bars during the day and suddenly when they're having a nap or sleep.
So your son was born in 2000. I didn't get, I don't know whether you want to use his name or not, but he was born in 2006. So he's 15 now or whatever. Yeah. How is he now?
Perfect.
He's great on a skateboard.
Is he brilliant? Brilliant.
Yeah, no.
From the bars.
Now, the thing about the Ponseti treatment is it's not guaranteed that there might not be down the road a need for surgery, but we were very lucky, I think, in that he's never had any issues. There was an awful lot of follow-up, especially for the first couple of years. The first year, it was pretty much weekly and then monthly appointments. And then after that, three months.
And what about the issue that was raised yesterday, Mary, by Emma, about different shoe sizes?
Yeah, that's very, very common. It can be a difference of up to 3 sizes in shoe as they grow, but luckily our chap has no difference really in the size of his feet, so we've never had to do that of getting different sizes of shoes, etc. So it hasn't been an issue for us.
And did he ever say to you, Mammy, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, and we explained it to him from the very beginning. I mean, you know, as soon as he could understand, the first few times putting the boots on him, he absolutely hated it and screamed and kicked, and you know, he could break your nose if he kicked you in the face. But it just became part of his life, and he was used to it and not a bother. He could get around
really well with them.
He could get in and out of his cot with the boots and bar on once he got to be about a year and a half old.
I just wonder, and I said it to Emma yesterday, and she was unaware. Is there a Facebook group at this stage among people who've had?
Yeah, there are a couple of support groups. When this happened with us, there weren't really, the only group I found was in the UK, and initially that's why I thought the only treatment was available in the UK. But I think since that, I did find a few groups and I think there is a couple of groups now in Ireland with you know, for support for parents, especially when kids are first diagnosed. It's a real shock to the system, you know, okay. Especially if you hear the term club foot. It kind of sounds kind of Victorian and draconian.
Yeah, what is that, Mary? Why was that image? Now, maybe it wasn't in you're younger than me by the time, but when we were growing up, we had this image that somebody with a club foot or someone with a short leg. This image was that they were not just slightly different than, but very, very different. And it's almost as if the disability was not just physical, but intellectual, which is bizarre.
Absolutely bizarre, And actually, the other thing, Joe, that I didn't mention, I know you asked at the beginning, often, and in fact, very frequently, it's diagnosed by ultrasound before the baby's born.
Okay.
It wasn't picked up in our case, but I think in the case of a very severe telophase, it usually would be picked up on an ultrasound because it's so pronounced. Some babies are born with their feet turned completely, you know, 180 degrees. But in our case, it wasn't. It was spotted after he was born.
And because they're so young, the tendons can grow back again.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, if you snip them, The Ponseti method. Okay, stay there with us for a sec, Paul. Joe at RT.ie. Bernard O'Brien has contacted us. Bernard, good afternoon. You are a shoemaker, a shoe fitter?
No, good afternoon, Joe. And I am a shoe retailer for over 40 years. We've had loads of customers like this. In the past, we could have helped them out by giving them two different sizes and not charging them any extra, maybe a small surcharge. And the manufacturers would help us out and make up the other odds.
And what do you do with the unused shoes?
Well, at the moment, that's the problem. You see, years ago, when there was manufacturing, say, locally, even in the UK, the factory would make up the matching shoes for you and at a small cost, so you could, the customer wouldn't have to bear the cost of both pairs. Now, there was the odd shoe club in the UK, and you kind of caught me unawares. I'm a member of the Society of Shoe Fitters in the UK, and we're a society that's trying to help people to get properly fitted footwear through training and education, because unfortunately, Joe, most people are wearing totally inappropriate footwear for the job that they're at. And you mentioned trainers, like trainers are what the English call trainers. They're for training. They're not for every day, even the good ones. So to help out this, I mean, I know there's loads of independent shoe shops like ourselves around the country that would. We couldn't do it on a mass scale, but on a local, we help out local customers that have different size feet.
And would many, did you say there's an odd shoe club?
What they did was say, you're living in Dublin, Joe, there's a fella down in Cork, you're an 8 and a 10, and he's a 10 and an 8. You meet him Portleigh.
You go shopping together. You put them in the post or whatever.
You're matched up. A fella your age, Joe, you're whatever, 41 or 2, are you? The computer could match people with, you know, similar taste and whatever. But I don't think there's enough volume of people in Ireland. But there could be a WhatsApp group set up to see, because independent retailers would definitely help.
Great idea. Okay, and Bernard, have you any idea? Well, you can't extrapolate, but it is a common, very rare.
Joe, most people, I'm a qualified shoe fitter. Nobody's feet are the same size for starters, right? The exact same size. Most people can get away with a little bit bigger on your left foot. 90% of people's left foot is slightly bigger, so that's just 10%. But a half a size either way. But there's lots of people who have serious differences, and God love them. They do have to go down that route of maybe getting a bespoke pair of shoes. Now, what means made to measure is you're looking at 1,200 or 1,400 euro to make a cast of your foot and a last. Now, that's your last forever. But who can afford that? Ryan Tuberty, your colleague up there, can afford those kind of things on his salary, you know.
He never puts a foot wrong, Bernard. He's always got good shoes on him, I'll say that. Lovely shoes. Stay there, Bernard, for a sec. Fintan is another angle on this, which I mentioned again when we were growing up. Children, and it was again, Mary pointed out, it was usually boys in the club foot, and I think it was boys in the short leg as well, but Fintan, it was because of an accident that you ended up with, what's the proper language, one leg longer than the other?
That's it, Joe. Yeah. That's it. Kind of one of these strange cases, but not particularly special or anything like that. Basically, it slipped in the garden shed off two steps and fell and broke the hip. Now, why it broke, nobody understood. I went in for the operation. Because I was a young man at the time, 20-odd years ago, they said, look, dynamic hip screw was a better way than replacing the hip, because the hip had to be replaced every so often. So dynamic hip screw put in, and that was fine.
Okay.
But the hip died. Nobody knew why it died. And while the hip was dying, the leg was getting shorter and shorter as the muscles were pulling at the leg itself, at the bone itself, were drawing up the leg. So he went in for a second operation just to get all the metal out, and then a third operation to replace the hip. And what actually happened was that in the middle of the hip operation, I had a pituitary tumour in the brain. I got a brain hemorrhage into it, and it infarcted and blew up. So I was rushed to Dublin to get the pituitary tumour removed. So I have the one thing of being the only man in Ireland to get my head and my arse done in the 1 week.
Okay, okay.
But so I left hospital with no pituitary, but with two legs the same size. But in the intervening years, the legs started to shrink back again. Again, nobody knows why. But what I had, because of the pituitary, which has all the steroids and all the hormones and all the growth and all the rest, I had very soft bones. And that explained why my hip smashed in the first place. So I had osteoporosis all over the body and osteopenia all over the body.
So now you have one leg shorter than the
other. Well, now I have one leg shorter than the other, but I'm healthy and well. So what I did originally, it was a half inch, and they were able to put an insert inside the shoe, and you just took it out and switched it from shoe to shoe. And now it's gone to an inch. So I buy a pair of shoes, and I walk in the door, and they take the heel off, they take the whole sole off, and they put in an insert, and then they go along and just glue back on, and it works fine. Now, in the case of Emma's young man, there's no reason, I think, that they can't make an insert that will fit inside a pair size 7 to fit his size 4 to size 7.
And tell us about the wonderful Albanian cobbler in Galway.
Oh, well, that's Edward. People know him well. He's there. He's there just by the Air Square Shopping Centre. And what he does is he just keeps my shoes going, because he'll put soles on the shoes, just ordinary soles on the shoes as they wear out. So I get extra life out of the shoes. But eventually, the tops of the shoes, the actual body of the shoes wear out. Right, but he doesn't do that. It's Walker Healthcare does the actual, and there's quite a number of people in Dublin doing it as well. I just read them here. They're orthopedic appliances, orthotic devices, and sport injury bracing. So that they are an independent company there in the Lisbon. But you go, that's who I give my shoes to. But I just looked it up online, and there's quite a number in Dublin, custom made orthopedic devices. What I put in, and up pop Foot Solutions, Foot Focus, Podiatry, custom orthotics designed in Dublin for your feet, so on. They're online, you know.
Well, maybe Bernard can help me. Bernard,
just one sec, Joe.
Okay,
just one
take your time, Fintan. Yeah?
Just one sec. Yeah. Just one solution for Emma. Okay. DuBarry has their outlets. They used to make the shoes in Ireland, DuBarry, and they have their outlet store in Ballinasloe.
That's
so
right.
I'd say if Emma would drop down to them, they'd easily get her a size 4 and size 7 of a DuBarry. Okay. I would expect them, because they make so many thousands of them down in Spain.
Hey, sorry, right? But the question, I'll ask Bernard in a second, I'll ask you, Fintan. You talk about Edward the cobbler in Air Square. Are there many shoe repair shops left?
Edmund is his name. He's a class act now. There's a few cobblers left there, but he's a craftsman. I know him very well.
But surely, Bernard, in this day and age, people don't repair shoes, they just buy new shoes, do they?
Well, unfortunately. Well, the environment, Joe, is changing. I mean, the cost of a container from China now has gone to $20,000, which was 15. So shoes haven't gone up for years. Shoes are cheaper now than they were 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But I know some people, if you buy a good pair of shoes, they will last. But unfortunately, a lot of shoes, they really aren't made. The inside, okay, the soles might be repaired when the heels, but the linings can be rotten, and the other side, the inside, what's the point in repairing them? But no, there are a lot of, there's a good few cobblers now. They're unfortunately getting scarce. So if you have one near you, mind them.
I remember my father had a pair of shoes that he loved. But I think, and he was always getting them repaired, but I think by the time after 10 or 15, I think they were like trigger sweeping brush and only fools and horses. That
They
weren't the same pair of shoes, because so much would have been replaced. But anyway, okay, thanks for those ideas. Bernard O'Brien, Fintan and Paul and Mary, thank you all. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Joanne contacted us. Joanne, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Oh, good. Joanne, you're in a very unusual case in that you're not entitled to be on that. You've five children, yourself and your partner.
Yeah.
But you're not entitled to be on the housing list.
No. So myself and my partner have been working full-time our whole life. Sorry, Joe, I'm a little bit nervous. So,
take your time.
Yeah, so basically back in March, I've five children, all under 12. The youngest is 12 weeks old. But back in March, we got our notice of termination from our landlord. We're in our house 7 years.
Yeah.
So obviously, as everyone does, they go on to Daft and they start looking, and which I have done since March. I've sent 47 emails between Daft, between letting agents. I'm living in South Dublin. And I've had two replies since March to view houses. We're in a serious housing crisis now. I've less than 5 weeks to find somewhere. I have a communion and a confirmation coming up in October as well for the children. And I just feel like I've hit a wall. I can't get anywhere. No one's getting back to me. I had a viewing in one house, a three-bed. And when they found out that I had five children, I was told I wasn't allowed to view it.
Mm.
Now I've one daughter and four boys. And obviously the three boys that are between 9 and 5, they all want to be in the one room.
So it was
kind of off-putting to me when they told me I couldn't even view the house. Now, obviously, there are a lot of families in the same situation as me at the moment. We are going from paying 1,600 to the minimum amount I found a 3 or 4 bed for in South Dublin is 2,600.
Wow.
The problem is we're both working full-time. We're obviously able to pay these rents. We'd rather not, but
yeah.
I worked it out with my partner over the next 30 years, let's say, if I'm paying the minimum, which would be for a 3-bed, 2,600. Over 30 years, I'll have bought a house for 1.8 million. It just doesn't make sense. The only reason why we can't go for a mortgage is because we can't save for a deposit while paying them rent. Yes, at the moment, we're saving. We're tipping away at it as much as we can. You have swimming lessons. You have everything else in the background that needs to be paid for. But the rent that we are going to have to pay now puts that all on hold for God knows how long.
So it's a catch 22. But when you hear the Affordable Housing Act and is there any for first time purchasers? Is there any of those, given that you can't go on the housing list because the two of you are working, which is bizarre? Even though your five children are in badly need of a house. But is there anything you can do to get out of that catch 22 you're in of paying high rent?
I've looked at everything, Joe. I got onto the Rebuilding Ireland home loan. I was talking to them. You still need 40,000 to 50,000 euro saved before you can get a loan with them. At this stage, because we don't have a deposit, it's not even for first time buyers like me. I've never owned property before. It's the wrong time for us to even buy at the moment, even if we did have the 50,000 euros sitting there. Because the house prices are so high, we wouldn't get anything in the area. I've opened my search to going a little bit further out. The last resort is moving the kids' schools. I really didn't want to have to do that. My daughter just started in secondary school.
Okay.
But even that, there's nothing. In total, there's 700 houses at the moment on Daft to rent in the whole of Ireland. And I'm just at the stage, I'm not sleeping.
And you have five children, so you have everything. We were talking about the other day, sniffles and challenges. And five young children are...
I've two at home at the moment who tested positive for COVID.
God. What age are they, Joanne?
The 9-year-old has it and my 12-week-old has it. Now, I'm so lucky I have five healthy babies, but I just don't even know where I'm going to be in 5 weeks' time. I can't, if they were offering 100% mortgages, we could afford a mortgage for 1,600 up to 2,000, but it'd be ours at the end of the 30 years, Joe.
But what
we're
you
going to be paying that rent, yeah.
What you can't get because of the central bank rules at the moment, what you can't get is a deposit that's necessary.
That's it, yeah, yeah. It's not even that. Look, I'm so lucky. I just wanted to voice my story on the radio for everyone else because I know there's so many families like us.
I see. I know it was highlighted in that recent brilliant movie, by all accounts, with the incredible actress Claire Dunn. It's called called Herself. And she finds, I don't know whether, I know I heard the clip last week. She goes into the welfare office and says, listen, you're going to spend so much on me, helping me out over the next few years. Can I borrow 35,000 and build my own house? Because she worked out she could build her own house for 35k on a bit of a council land that was unoccupied. But that's how desperate people are.
It is. You know, I don't want people, like, I just want to voice, I don't know where I'm going to be in 5 weeks' time. I can't get a viewing. I've managed two viewings since March, two emails back from my 47 emails. I've rang every letting agent on Dublin South and given my details. And I just feel, by saying I've five children, it's nearly like they don't want to know. It's better to have a family with three children in their family. Like, we're looking for something long-term. I don't want to have to move again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard enough on the children.
That age and school and friends. And
that's it, yeah. I'm sorry for getting upset
I hope nothing in this conversation brought that. But Joanne, don't mind this question, but the fact that you say you have four boys and a girl, does that make a difference? Do you think?
Well, yeah. Well, the boys want to be together anyway.
Of course, yeah.
It's a bunk bed and a single bed. And we've managed. We're in a three bed at the moment. We've managed perfectly fine. Obviously now with the isolating with COVID and everything else, it's just an added stress to everything. The closer I get to the 5 weeks, the more anxious I'm getting. Because I don't know where I'm going to be for Halloween for the kids. I don't know where I'm going to be at Christmas for the kids.
And Joanne, which is what we're hearing, that a lot of individual property owners, landlords as they're called, which has an awful resonation in Ireland, but that individual house owners are just, is your landlord selling up?
I have no idea.
Did he say anything to you?
Our notice of termination, no. But that's what I'm getting from a lot of the letting agencies when I ring. It's like, well, we've no properties because the landlords are all selling because now's the time to sell. Like, I get it, and that's completely on our landlord. Has been amazing for the 7 years, and everyone after COVID has suffered in their own ways. So you can't, like, I've gotten on great with the landlord. It's nothing to do with that. It's the fact that I have nowhere else to go now.
Yeah.
And if I don't move out on the date that it says on my termination,
which is five weeks hence.
It's just a little bit over 5 weeks, the end of October. And if I do not move out of my accommodation on that date, I am known as a squatter. And I'm not going down that route. I wouldn't, but what do I do? Where do I go? I'm willing to pay the money for rent, but I can't even get an email back. I can't even get a viewing. Which is very frustrating. And I know, God, I'm so lucky, and people will look at me and go, you've five healthy babies. That's all well and good. But how do I put a roof over their head?
And you don't want to declare yourself homeless. But you might have to, but
That's not where I want to go for my children. They're at an age where they take everything in, Joe. It's like,
and we know the trauma of that on children, the long-lasting trauma. Stay there. Maybe people have ideas about... stay there, Joanne, please.
Thank you, Joe.
Joanne is in a family where two parents are working. They have five young children from 12 weeks to 12 years. And they were in rented accommodation for 7 years and they got on well and they were paying rent of, I think, 1,600. Now the landlord says he or she... wishes to have the property back or vacated for whatever reason, and she just finds it extraordinarily difficult to try and get another rented property. Not difficult, impossible. And she's 5 weeks left. Mary is in around Wexford, Waterford. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay, you're talking about your own children, Mary. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think what they do in Scotland is a great idea. My daughter, both my daughters couldn't afford to buy in Ireland, even though they did everything right in their lives and got their education and jobs and careers and everything.
Yeah.
And my daughter moved to Scotland, where okay. she works in the oil business, and she got a loan from the government. I think it was £30,000. And she put it down on a house, and it has to be paid back if ever the house is sold.
Okay, okay.
So she doesn't pay any interest on it. It's just money to get. And my other daughter just decided she'd call it quits, and she's moved to one of the most expensive places in the world, and she's paying less than in Dublin.
Paying less rent, Mary?
Yes.
My God.
Than Dublin. So she decided... a very good profession decided, well, Ireland's just not worth it. You can spend 400,000 and still not get a nice house.
Yeah.
And she decided to go. And friends of mine left for the same reason. A young couple working in Dublin decided they had a better chance to go overseas.
And you say housing was pivotal in that. The lack and cost of housing was pivotal in that decision.
It was the number one reason.
Wow.
Number one reason. And they didn't want to be paying a fortune.
Yeah.
And after all, let's face it, there was a housing crash.
Yeah.
Say that happens again.
Yeah.
And you've paid 400,000 and it's not, make any sense.
And houses in Dublin have gone crazy again. I'm told they're not back to 208 levels before the crash, but the difference in the price of housing in Dublin and, say, Galway and the outskirts of Galway is just phenomenal. Phenomenal.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it. You shouldn't have to spend all your money on the roof over your head.
And Joanne, is
especially
that...
Especially when it might crash.
Yeah.
It might crash again.
That's the... And you're left bereft. Stay there, Mary, for a second. Joanne, 51551 is our text number. Joanne is... Now, I'm just reading out what people are saying. Has Joanne tried outside of Dublin?
Yeah, I have.
Have you? Okay.
Yeah, I've looked into it. Again, as I said, Joe, it's something that the house prices aren't any cheaper outside Dublin either. You might save a couple of hundred, but it'd be the commuting. So I'm in my job.
You'd be in a rural area.
Yeah. And my partner's also in his job a long time. I'd spend the time driving. I'd rather not take the kids. There's been enough disruption with COVID, with everything over the last 2 years of their life. I would much rather not have to take them out of their schools. All I'm asking for is to get a viewing, even. I can't even seem to get a viewing. And
a three... Did someone say to you, oh, you've five children, you'd be overcrowded in a three-bedroom house?
Yeah, I had.
But you wouldn't, because you've four boys and a girl.
Yeah, I know. It's like one of my mum's friends said to me, it's gone back to the way it was in the 70s.
Yeah.
You nearly have to lie to get places in your life. Like, as I said, we'd be paying up to 3,000. That'd make us, over the 30 years, buying a house for 1.8 million in Dublin. I don't even want that. I don't need a house for 1.8 million. It just, there's no avenue for the people like me in the middle, who both of us are working full-time. We want to work.
Yeah.
We want to pay our rent. We want to pay our bills. But looking at rent like this now, we'll be left with possibly €500 a month to live off for swimming lessons, for all the extracurricular stuff that the boys want to do, football. It's just, there has to be, someone has to listen to us in the middle. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're not absolutely flush. We don't go on holidays. We don't have, I have a 12D car. I'm not driving a 212. All I want to do is put a roof over my children's heads. And if they would only reconsider 100% mortgage again, that's the only way. We could afford a mortgage. We could afford repayments of 16 to 2,000. And it'd be ours. I could leave it for my children. I'm going to be paying that rent to someone else for... Now, obviously, I don't mind if I could get one. I can't even get a house at this stage. I just think it's us in the middle. Like, I've been told in the past, like, you're better off not working, you're better off getting your money from the state or doing this, that. I'm not going to do that, and I will not raise my children to see that that's okay. I've worked every single day since they've been born, and I just don't know what to do now. I just don't know where to go.
And when you say you've worked, what you mean is you've worked inside the home and outside the home.
Both.
Yeah, I know you have.
Yeah.
I know you have.
Yeah.
But just, I'll ask you two opposite questions. Mary, would your children come back to Ireland, like to come back to Ireland?
I think once you're abroad and you settle and you have children, once again, settled in school and stuff. Now, they don't have children, but if they did, they probably wouldn't.
They wouldn't come back?
Probably not.
Okay. And Joanne, it's a question here on my screen. Might it come to Joanne moving abroad?
I couldn't do that. I couldn't. I know, again, it's like people are like, well, I've a family here, my mom, my dad, my sisters, everyone.
We're
all quite a close family.
Doesn't arise.
No, it's not something that I would want to do, to be away from everyone. Like, obviously, my parents are getting older, and I just can't understand how there are no houses. Like, I'm literally sitting on Daft every single hour, and I'm told then by the letting agent, oh, don't go by Daft. Sure, the stuff, because there was two houses I went to see. The first one, there was 250 applications for one house. The other one, there was 350.
And
you're up against all this, and I feel because I've this five children that I'm getting punished. Like, I'm not even able to view them. Like, what's the next stage? Do you know what I mean? I don't know, Joe. I feel like I'm not sleeping at night. I'm worrying about this. I have a communion, a confirmation coming up. Obviously, we've all been affected by COVID. I just can't seem to get anywhere. I can't. And the closer it gets to the 5 weeks,
the
less I'm able to eat. And I'm, and it's.
And now you have two children with COVID.
But look, they're healthy, they're fine.
Now, what we see all over the place, especially in South Dublin, is new apartments. But again, you're back in, even if you were interested in the apartment, you're back into the deposit you'd have to fork up yourself.
Yeah, even that, like, Joe, like, we have to have, to move out of this house in 5 weeks' time, we have to have €6,000. If we get a house for 2,600, let's say, and that's the minimum, we have to have that month up front and also the deposit ready to go. So that's €6,000 that could go towards our deposit for hopefully buying in the future that we're handing over for 1 month to live.
It really is. And catch 22 is too,
it is
too small.
It is. I just feel now we're struggling, even though my partner finished his apprentice. He's fully qualified. I'm working. I'm full time. We struggled back when he was doing his apprentice with small children. Now we're struggling, even though the two of us have our jobs and we're willing to pay our rent, and we're still struggling. It just doesn't seem to be, it's like we're nearly lost. And there's loads, it's not just me, there are loads of people, across the country that are suffering.
Other suggestions coming in, but credit union. I don't know.
To borrow off the credit union.
Yeah, but you need savings, don't you?
Well, this is it. No, the credit union, they're amazing. And they are, but again, you're borrowing to buy at the wrong time. Like, so for us to buy a house around this area, it's 450,000. Do you know what I mean? It's not as easy as just get a loan off the credit union. You need to show 6 months of saving. You need to, I've spoken to mortgage advisors. You need to be able to show that you're not spending outside money on anything. Like, it's tough. There's loads of criteria there. We could definitely afford it if they just said tomorrow, here's a mortgage for you for 450,000. Just make sure not to miss a payment. We've been renting 12 years and I've never missed 1 month.
Yeah.
It's just, you feel like you're getting nowhere. And I just feel like I hit a brick wall last night. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to send an email to Joe and see, can someone help, or can anyone give me advice? Or can someone just...
Yeah, so advice coming in, Joanne. Stay with us, Anne Mary. Yeah. Joe at rt.ie, 1850 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joanne, who started this conversation because of your real life experience that you're going through at the minute, I'm just, what's it like to have a 12-week-old and a 12-year-old, the bookend of your family at the minute, children, both of them with COVID?
You know, I'm so lucky. As I said, Joe, the baby was kind of asymptomatic, so I just got him tested just to be on the safe side. And then it's actually my 9-year-old son who tested positive, so he's just been isolating in a room for the last 8 days. Today was his let-out day, so... it's just there's a lot going on at the moment, obviously for a lot of people. I know you had landlords on there. I don't want to people thinking it's up to landlords or that I have a problem with my landlord. I definitely don't. We're just willing to pay the rent at the moment, but it's the problem that we can't even get a viewing. That's what the problem is here. And obviously, we do eventually want our forever home, but the banks won't even facilitate us. And it's after the year that, or the couple of years that everyone's had,
it strikes me like you heard the caller from Manhattan, who was going into a meeting, he's Robert. But he was, on the one hand, the family are benefiting from the Fair Deal, which is a good scheme for so many people. But on the other hand, you're told, well, if you rent out the house, you're going to be penalised. So people say, well, whereas if there was even a small incentive to rent out the house,
leases that prevent you from
He's in Dunleary. His house is idle in Dunleary for 2 years. Vivian is you describe yourself as an accidental landlord, Vivian.
Yes, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I had a property. As it happened, I had purchased it and I'd lived in it. But then my family home, came up, so I ended up moving back to my family home. So I had this property. So I decided to try rent it out, and if it worked, fine. You know. So I rented it for more than 15 years. Right. And generally my tenants, I had about 3 tenants in the whole 15 years.
Great.
And but ultimately I left the market in 2019 and I sold the property because it actually didn't pay me to keep it, to rent it, because I was paying the tax. I was paying LTT, I was paying RTB.
Residential Tenancy Board, the local property tax, yeah.
Yeah, and by the time those expenditures were coming out, I was actually paying the tax man more than I was receiving.
So what did you do?
I decided to sell the house.
And that, basically you got out, your house was no longer available to rent.
No. But it would have still been there, Joe, if there was any reasonable, amount support, that I would actually be coming out with. But I just felt, who am I doing it for? Mm. And I wasn't actually benefiting. And I had great tenants. I had absolutely no problem with the tenants I had in the property for all the time. And I felt bad about giving people notice when I decided to sell the house. Yeah. But I gave them about 6 months' notice.
Okay. And how did they react? Because it sounds like you didn't want to, but you felt you had to.
Yeah, the last couple I had in, they actually left before the tenancy was up, before the lease was up. And I didn't have a problem with it, because at the end of the day, I knew there was difficulties finding properties in Dublin to rent. And I thought, and that's why I gave them the extra notice as well. I wasn't obliged to do it under law. But because that couple hadn't been in the house so long. But I had other people that were there 7 years. I had a family there 7 years, And I just feel it's a huge disincentive for landlords. And I always looked after the house. If it needed anything done, I got it done. Plumbers went down, electricians went down. There was never anything they didn't have didn't have.
Well done. Okay, Vivian, thanks indeed. That's Vivian in Dublin 8. Now, Joanne, first of all, there's loads of support coming in. There's loads of these people said there used to be a scheme, I have a vague memory of it, where the council, you get a county, a corporation or a council loan, and you wouldn't need a deposit. But there's, you've tried every angle.
Yeah, that council, it's called the Rebuilding Ireland Home Loan, and you can obviously you can rent or you can get a mortgage with the government, but you still need your 40,000 deposit, and you can only get a mortgage through that if you've been refused by two other banks, and you need proof of that. So, as I said before, like you've had callers on there that are, it's the problem with not being able to even get a viewing of a house. Like we have the we are willing to pay the extortionate rents that they're going for at the moment just to put a roof over our children's heads, but hopefully somewhere down the line we'll be able to afford to buy. We'll get a deposit together.
And if your name with loads of estate agents, and if any estate agents comes on to us, we pass on their names to you. We won't pass on your name to anybody, but we pass on if people contact us, we pass on. Kind regards to you, Joanne, and your family at this time.
Thanks, Joe. Okay. Thanks for being so understanding as well.
And thanks for contacting us. Thank you, Joanne.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Fergus Sweeney, producer. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.